Hey, housewives, come on in. You know the dirty dishes are still in the sink from yesterday and the laundry is still in the basket. Pop your AirPods in and make yourself at home here.
I'm Tracy.
I'm Tori.
And we are your Unlikely Housewives. Stepping out in faith and believing that God calls the unlikely, we are here to show you the appreciation and validation you deserve, lead you to authentic relationships, and release you of believing the cultural lies to restore your faith and wellness.
Pull up those high-waisted yoga pants, tighten your top knot, and reheat your coffee for the third time. Turn up the volume and let's go. Housewives, this is Tori here, and I have somebody special here. Tracy,
Tracy with a cold.
Tracy, her voice got extra deep. Actually, instead today, I have Andrew, my husband.
Hey, housewife. Yeah, I know there's husbands that listen too, so.
Fair enough, there are. There are a couple named Andrew and Chris.
Oh, we've heard of others too. There's like at least 8 or 10 of us. We're going to start our own little group.
Oh, good. I think that you should. And meet up on once a month.
At the bar.
At the bar. Also good idea. This is a different kind of episode for you guys. I've been fairly transparent about the health issues of anxiety and depression that I've had. There's a previous episode. I'll link in the show notes for you. But I have... In the last 2 years, my life, my mood, motivation, joy, stress has all been flipped upside down and changed.
Amen.
And I'm still married to him. That is because of one person. And that is actually Andrew and my general physician, Dr. Brian Burns, who we have here today.
Hello, housewives.
And husband.
And husband. Yes. So Andrew was recommended to you a couple of years ago. By your sister. Okay, five years ago.
Something like that,
holy dang.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're in Kansas.
Yeah.
So 5 years ago, Andrew got recommended by your sister, right? And I don't even remember what your sister connection is with.
I think there was another patient that is a friend of hers. She lives in Omaha. A friend of hers who recommended you.
Mm-hmm.
So Andrew went in for an appointment and kind of explained why you went in, if you don't mind.
I mean, it wasn't the first one I went in for, but it was a few appointments later. Just didn't have the oomph that I used to have. I'm not talking about anything.
That's what she said?
Right. It was COVID. It was coming out of COVID. It was in COVID. Never know exactly how long COVID lasted, but you know, it was the depression. It was a just not feeling like myself, not wanting to tackle the hardest thing in the morning like I used to. Getting short with the kids, losing tempers that I never would not have done. I mean, just all kinds of things. No matter what I did that made me happy before didn't work now. The things that concerned me before, that didn't concern me before, concerned me now, right? Always looking behind my back. I had never really experienced anxiety before. Maybe once, but I'd found myself kind of dealing with, I got to feel like I'm having a heart attack for a second.
Yeah.
So I'd find myself just kind of slowing down. And for someone who's very active, who likes to outmaneuver and outrun my kids.
And he's got the scars to prove it.
Right. And be the guy at work who's always the first one there, last one to leave. The guy who also always solves the problems, who never wanted to admit that there's something wrong. You're the first person I ever really admitted that, hey, I kind of feel broken.
Right.
So with all that being said... You listen to a story of why I was in there and you go, huh, that's funny. I know exactly what it is. And you call it?
Americanitis.
Americanitis. Okay. So this is?
Neuropsychopharmacology.
And, okay, explain Americanitis.
Well, Stephen Stahl kind of is the guy back in the 90s who was really kind of figuring out how the brain was wired. And he wrote the book called Essential Psychopharmacology. It's in its fifth edition. He's well known. He's out of University of California, San Diego. Well published. Many, many texts. Various neuropsych issues. But he takes it very much from a brain chemistry cause. For me, in being a family medicine doctor, we got trained in psychiatry and psychology, and that was fine. But I was trained, residency was in research, and I dealt with a lot of Kansas City, Missouri school teachers. And I found that these people are very stressed out. I've never seen anybody dealing with so much stuff. They had third and fourth graders bringing guns and knives to school, fearful for their lives, and this was a daily occurrence for them. It seemed to me that whatever I had been trained in wasn't working. It just so happened that Stephen Stahl was coming to town, massive meeting, CMEs, continuing medical education, and I said, I got to meet this guy. I got to see this guy. So I go, and he kind of flipped the lights on for me. And as soon as he started talking neuroscience or brain chemistry, it clicked, because I could honestly say I personally had been dealing with similar type of scenarios of significant anxiety to include panic, but also that term of hypervigilance, constantly being on edge, constantly being what's next, can't quiet my brain, can't take that breath to just relax. And I lived with that. I remember having my first panic attack at the age of 5. I can still remember the way the room smelled, the way it looked, the feel of the floor. It's ingrained in my brain, which is a neurochemical certainty. Our brains tell us that. And when that happens, it says that there's a mountain lion behind that bush. Don't go to that bush anymore. I was in my room. There was no mountain lion coming, but there was no way of telling me that it wasn't coming.
Yeah.
And that's when, having dealt with that for 35 years, all of a sudden things started to click. And I said, oh, this is different. This is not what I've been taught, which wasn't working. I believe that this is something that would work.
And you are a personal example of that.
I am.
You were your first patient.
I was.
Okay, so talk about, this is based on a study.
Yeah. The constant description, or where things are based, we have a general statement of America today. Only in the last 50, 60, 70 years have we, through technology and modern conveniences, changed our lifestyle to become no longer, quote, hunter-gatherers, farmers, in having that physical activity to obtain food, shelter, and clothing.
Right. Which I'm thankful for.
Yes.
I would not be a very good gatherer.
No, I thought you meant me.
Oh, yeah. No. Also, I don't think you'd be a very good hunter. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
It just depends on how it works.
Sometimes, we would not survive.
Yes. So it's a wonderful theory to apply. Mm-hmm. Okay, we used to be like this, but how are you going to prove it? There was a pretty significant study that was published about the Amish, and it looked at their life and how do they live. And they do live very much like the 16th, 17th, 1800s. They are killing chickens to put chicken on the table. They are chopping wood to keep the house warm. They are fetching water at the river and, heaven forbid, run into that classic stressor of the mountain lion, for which they have to fight with or flee from. And come to find out that the amount of clinical diagnoses of anxiety or depression and or the neurochemical problems for serotonin and adrenaline were not found in this population, to almost a zero degree. And it's one thing to say, okay, we're all going to become Amish. I don't get very many takers on that when I recommended it. I think you especially said, nah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Not going to become Amish anytime soon.
Right. So they looked at the Amish people and they kind of came up with some key tenets that I talk about to kind of maintain our health. One is they eat right. You know, they're growing their own food, so they have a good diet. They get up with the sun and they go to sleep with the sun.
I'm 0 for 7 so far.
Yep. Yeah.
Maybe it's only 6. But
and we wonder why we had an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exercise. Now, you did have that. That was your major mark.
Wait, what exercise? What are you counting as exercise?
I'm doing things constantly with the kids and the dogs.
Okay. All right. I'll let that
one go. He told me he was a marathoner.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't tell him when.
Okay, exactly. It was split up into lots and lots of little tiny
walks
pieces.
To the mailbox.
Yes, it worked. Eat right, sleep right, exercise well. But they also need to de-stress. They need to remove those stressors in our lives, wherever they may be coming from. And then they need to have a sense of purpose, who they are. The Amish, if I plant the beans and you plant the wheat and you plant the corn, if I break my leg, y'all are going to come help me because y'all need my beans. If you break your leg, we're going to help you because we need the wheat and vice versa for the corn.
Right.
But they also have a sense of community and connectedness. And so not only do they have a sense of individual purpose, but they also have that they are a piece of a bigger puzzle. And one other thing that they also did mention was that they also had a centering cause involving God, involving faith.
They have faith.
They absolutely do. And so in having that, it is able to see them through times which others might not be able to handle and manage the stress. And because of that faith, they were able to overcome. And again, those are just kind of key tenets that I believe leads to health. Now, trying to do that in America today is pretty difficult.
I was going to say impossible. Is that one? That's pretty.
Yeah.
Let me ask, how many patients have you seen that come in and go, have it all together, are totally good?
I haven't seen those.
I haven't seen those yet. Okay.
If I did, they were the people who are schizophrenic because they are completely not in touch with reality, so that they're the ones that always think everything's fine.
Yeah, fine, fine. It's everything's fine.
Their world is falling apart about their ears, and they're telling you that, oh, no, tomorrow will be fine.
Okay. That kind of sounds good right now.
Yeah. Well, lack of reality sometimes. Ignorance is bliss.
Yes, yeah.
True.
Okay. Well, we're not going to be Amish.
Right. So the three things that kind of looked at over 28 plus years of treating patients and having lived this for over 50, our culture being one. We have a very modern lifestyle with modern conveniences, which have taken away the physicalness out of our day to obtain food, shelter, and clothing. Two, it's the stressors. And probably the number one stressor, unfortunately, is the technology and the cell phone. You can fill in all the gaps and things that go with that. It's keeping up with the Joneses. And
no, not here in Johnson County.
Neighborhood. Correct. That's where I often see many housewives come in and explain how things are fine until they come behind the door. And then in the room, they go, oh, things are not fine. And I have to look at them and smile and go, don't worry. They're not fine for everybody else either.
I know. And I referred some of those housewives to you.
Yes.
So I'm like, hey, let me tell you what worked for me.
It's okay.
It's okay.
And the reality of it is that we may put on the face out and about, but the reality of it is we may not necessarily truly have it all together. And this is where, as was announced, again, I think with your discussion, the thing I come back to is the thing with psychiatry and psychology, they often have labels. And those labels often come with a stigma. You're depressed. You're OCD. You're generalized anxiety disorder, with or without psychotic features. Can't break HIPAA, so I can't mention anything.
You're 4 for 4. But also, just the looking opposite at Andrew's chart. Of schizophrenia would be the, hey, today was a good day. Tomorrow's going to suck. I just know it.
Yeah.
Because I hit my high.
Yeah.
I'm ready to go down now.
Yeah.
Right?
And we do. And I look at everybody and go, yeah, we all do. We're going to have good days and bad days. And the difficulty of that is we need to not lose it on the bad days. We need to enjoy the good days. And yet the reality of it is we need to keep going. And kind of no matter what's hitting us, we need to continue moving forward. And explaining, for instance, in your situation, brain chemistry, and I talk about things like serotonin and adrenaline, and you looked at me like I had three eyeballs. I don't believe I did at the time, but in doing so, I was then able to look at you and go, I'm going to guess your sleep is probably off. I'm guessing you may have some anxiety and or hypervigilance. I'm guessing mood is a little bit more labile, less stable, more short-fused. As you said, more easily able to lose it with the kids.
Or the wife.
Or the wife. I understand.
That one was deserved.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I looked at you weird because I was like, is he talking estrogen and testosterone?
Right.
Right.
And then when you explained it,
I remember this.
Okay. And that's what everybody looks at and goes, when they all show up and say, Doc, I think I have a thyroid problem, or I think I have a testosterone problem, or I'm perimenopausal. They all come in with their, what they believe to be.
I would like to reflect that he did. For Tracy's sake, he did gesture to me for perimenopausal. Just Tracy will enjoy that, and well, I'm gonna. That's just for her.
I didn't want to gesture to you.
And that's because everybody does what we're supposed to do, which is self-diagnose with WebMD,
which is what everybody does.
Right. We need you just to write the prescription. We already got it figured out.
Right.
Right. Okay.
We don't need a doctor. Mm-hmm. And I smile and nod, go, well, WebMD actually did not go to medical school, mm-hmm. and if you do follow the Google rabbit hole, you usually end up dead. Mm-hmm. So. My recommendation oftentimes is to, if you can just tell me your symptoms, I'm more likely to be able to give you the pattern that I recognize because that's what I do for a living. And as part of serotonin, sleep, worry, moody, headaches, and then GI issues. I can't tell you how many people have come in after being seen by the GI, been scoped top to bottom, had CAT scans and sonograms and labs done and all these different diets, and they're still miserable. And I look at them and I go, how's sleep and anxiety and mood and headache? They look at me funny and ask, have you been following me?
How'd you know?
You assume it's a byproduct of something bigger. It's not just...
Sure. Yeah. And that's the reality. And the best story was the grandmother that leaned forward after me finishing up discussing about her grandson, and she did truly lean forward and said, can I ask you a question? And I said, sure. She leaned forward, have you been following my boy? I said, no, Grandma. I leaned back, got as far away from her as I could, but I leaned back and said, no, Grandma, I'm here too much. I can't really follow your boy, but I do know how the body works, what messes it up, and how to put it back. And that's where those things come to play. And then with the serotonin, which is half of the stress coin, heads. We know on the other side of that quarter, tails comes with it. We all get that. If serotonin's off, then adrenaline's got to be off. And that's probably when I looked at you and I said, and I bet you, your energy's low. You might be troubling with focus and concentration. Your motivation, which was there. I know you're self-motivated. You're going to push yourself, but doggone it, that, oh boy, let's go. Let's get it done. Isn't there like it was. Enjoyment out of life, things that used to be fun, have lost their fun. And then pain becomes modulated. If the mountain lion, I will gesture at you, gashes you in the arm, mm-hmm. if you stop and go, ow, I have a boo-boo in the midst of a fight with the mountain lion, you will die.
Mm-hmm.
So brains through adrenaline will dampen that at the level of the spine and stop that signal from getting to the brain and registering pain so that you can continue the fight in the moment. Now, when the mountain lion takes off after a bunch of rabbits and you look back and he's gone and you decide, oh, thank goodness, and you stop and you're walking and the adrenaline's wearing off and you go, oh boy, my arm hurts. Oh my goodness, what happened? How did I get gashed and not know it? There's stories abound of people walking out of avalanches or doing things in amazing situations that they probably shouldn't have been able to do, but did. And because, adrenaline does that.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it? Okay. This is a faith-based podcast. I mean, like, how cool is God? I mean, just the little things details. It's all the details.
For all you housewives, I still have it on my phone, and it was literally... It was a picture of a mountain lion, and it said, mother fights off a mountain lion because of child being around. Basically, you housewives turn into mama bears for baby bears. You all would take bullets for baby bear. And if I got to choose Sally versus the mountain lion, I'm going to take the mountain lion. Now, if Baby Bear's around, I'm going to take Sally, because Sally's going to become Mama Bear.
Yeah.
And Mama Bear's going to kick that mountain lion's butt.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened. And this woman fought this mountain lion off because her child was around for the child's safety. And again, that's innate. I also still say that Papa Bears still eat baby bears. Sometimes mm-hmm. we don't, mm-hmm. but we love them. Just sometimes a little different.
A while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't mind hanging out with them.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So the flip side is the adrenaline. So it's serotonin and adrenaline.
Yep. Two stress chemicals that always come together. If I give you all calm when the mountain lion shows up, but I give you no adrenaline, well, you'll stand there calmly when the mountain lion shows up. He'll knock you over, eat you, you're dead. I think that's bad.
Yeah, I would agree. This is partly where I came in, because as Andrew's trying to tell me this appointment that you had with him, and you're explaining the Amish and Americanitis and mountain lion, and all of these keywords are coming out, and I'm going,
He's already been day drinking.
Yeah, exactly.
Amish mountain lion. I don't know. I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I want to go to the next appointment.
Yeah.
And so that's how, because I have been on antidepressants for years,
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
almost 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. 9 years.
And it was probably serotonin only.
Yep.
That would be a Celexa, a Lexapro, a Prozac, a Zoloft, Sertraline, Citalopram, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So you're calm, cool, collected, but you don't have any energy, no focus.
And I thought that was life, because nobody tells you.
No.
I thought, okay, either I can be really depressed and anxious
right.
without anything, or
right.
I can be
less
depressed and anxious, but no highs either.
Correct.
Like no motivation, no like real, like
don't no go zest for life.
Zest, like, hey, this is awesome.
Yeah. Libido's gone. So. That creates all kinds of
all
issues.
All kinds of issues.
Yes.
So
at the same point, if I were to give you all adrenaline, but no calm, we will run around like a chicken with your head cut off, waiting for the mountain lion to knock you over and eat you. You're still dead. So having had many a discussion, most commonly with a wonderful, dearly departed friend of mine who was a psychiatrist for over 35 years in town, and we'd have many a discussion about this, and it would be a constant battle. And he would look at me and go, no, you have to diagnose anxiety or something on the serotonin spectrum. And for instance, then you have to diagnose ADD to get the other side. And I said, well, physiologically, our brains want to do both of these. So if God created us such that when the mountain lion shows up, you better stay calm, but you better get going. Why wouldn't I want to replace that the way God designed?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he and I would differ. And this would be where a lot of, I believe, the psychiatry and psychology world, they follow DSM-5 or 5R or whatever we're up to now. And they have individualized criteria to make a diagnosis. Once the diagnosis is made, then they can give you a medication. When I look at them and I go, if heads is on the quarter, I bet you tails is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have many people who will walk in, and I will now pick on the college students that might listen. May not be many, but they want to come in and they all want Adderall. And I said, oh, okay, that's fine. So how's your sleep? How's your anxiety? How's mood? How's headaches? How's stomach? And when they all look at me and they all go, that's fine. I go, that's amazing. You have a tails only quarter, and you don't have the other side of the equation. I usually will then look at them and say, I'll be more than happy to give you a non-stimulant. There's many options, Strattera being one, but I'm not going to give you Adderall because you came in and asked for it. So again, the vast majority of the other ones, when I start talking about sleep, anxiety, mood, headache, and gut, look at me and go, why did you know that? And that's not what I came for. And I smile and nod and go, if you truly have an adrenaline problem, you will have a serotonin problem. They come together.
Yeah.
It was just the Taco Bell. At night, huh?
Yeah. That's why they're open till 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cheapest gas in town.
Uh-huh. All right.
I'm done.
Dad joke. Gosh, awful. So one of the other things that I find amazing about this is that when you get people on a combination, because it was a teeter-totter of going, okay, you've been on all these serotonin side ones. Yep. Now let's add the adrenaline side.
Yep.
And we have figured out to level out. And like, that is awesome. And again, it changed my world 2 years ago. But you have a success rate for getting people off of medication.
First of all, we talk about remission rate, which means if you come in like you did or like you did and said, hey, I have all these symptoms, whether you self-diagnosed or didn't, the remission rate is returning you to a point of health, a point of well-being. I'm calm, cool, collected. I'm energized, focused, and motivated. And I've arrived at I'm Wellville. Very different than Wellsville. Nothing against it. But I'm Wellville is the two horses getting your stagecoach to arrive at I'm Wellville. And that is a balancing act, because when you add adrenaline, all of a sudden your sleep or anxiety or irritability might raise up. And then they look at me and go, Adderall did this to me. And I said, how's your energy, focus, and motivation? And you say, well, that's fine. And I go, then the adrenaline part's fine. The serotonin is lacking. And so we need to correct and raise that up. We need to whack that horse on the backside and get it going to get it to balance what we need for the adrenaline increase. And so it is a teeter-totter. I talk constantly about the balancing act of both sides. And again, God's got us, you know, intricately designed, you know, before the foundation of the earth. And yet it's amazing. I understand. And serotonin and adrenaline are only two. I mean, dopamine's another one, glutamate, glycine, substance P, GABA. I mean, this is exponential. And there's many billions of neurons and how they all interconnect and how they all interact with one another. Our brains are still more complex than any computer out there, including the AI. Our brains are more intricate. And
it had to have been evolution. A big bang or something.
Kaboom.
Right? Yeah, kaboom. And that all came together.
What happened? Yeah.
No, I wanted to make a point that whenever a follow up appointment, I made not even generalization, I made a comment and you were quick to slap me down when I said balancing the uppers
downers
with the downers.
Yeah.
So for those of you that hear this, one does this, one does this. Can you help?
Yeah.
Spread that slap to everyone else?
Yeah.
Who wants to share it?
I would be more than happy to share that slap because, again, we go back to, and I don't wish to sound disingenuous to the psychiatrists and the psychologists in this world because, again, they all have very significant parts to play. And yet, but where the vast majority of the work that was done was when we didn't understand how the brain was wired. And so it was during that time that we decided to call these uppers and downers. And so the statement would be, well, why would you take an upper and then have to take a downer? And I go, all I know is we need serotonin to stay calm and we need adrenaline to get going. And so when the mountain lion showed up, the closest facsimile would be in a pharmacologic world would be an alprazolam or Xanax with an Adderall at the exact same time. Because in about 15 minutes, they're both going to hit, assuming that they're balanced. You're going to be calm, but you're going to get things done. Now, for that, there is a lot of people who are aghast and are saying, but aren't those addictive? And aren't you creating problems with this?
Mm-hmm.
And I smile and nod and go, if the wire is popped for serotonin, sleep, anxiety, mood, headache, and gut, it's popped. You have a serotonin-size hole that's necessary. Alprazolam or Xanax happens to go in there and fill that serotonin slot or that place so that instead of throwing out the 10 serotonin to make the synapse or the connection to go downstream, if you fill up five of them and you release five, then all of a sudden now we're connected in one firing and all of a sudden calmness happens. Same with adrenaline. They balance each other. Not to get too technical, but I believe it really does make a difference for people to understand is that, for instance, the sleep pathway that God has created to get us to sleep, keep us asleep, and then wake us up once we're rested has several thousand little synapses or little breaks between neurons. The standard would be you need to throw 10 serotonin across that bridge, across that gap, to then send the signal down the neuron to the next gap. And this gap, or this neuron that controls sleep, probably has 1,000, 10,000 synapses. How in the world does that thing ever work? And they do this in a millisecond. Yet, Stahl's been able to show and talk about the varying ways these models work. So where an SSRI comes in is you only throw out five, but there's a serotonin reuptake pump that takes back three. So only two got across. Then you throw out another five and take back three. Now you're to four. You throw out five, take back three. Now you're to six. Throw out five. Okay, now you're to eight. Throw out five. Oh, we finally got to 10. And so that goes one neuron to the next gap, which is open, and they got to do that again. Five firings to get a connection to go to the next gap. I look at him, I'm going, I don't understand how this works at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing God didn't ask me any of these questions because I would have messed it up.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you take an SSRI, like you may have been on in the past, a Zoloft, a Lexapro, etc., you block the reuptake pump. So you throw out five, but you take back none.
Hmm.
You throw out five again. Oh, I got to 10. I'm there. Okay, two firings to make the connection beats five firings on each gap. So that's why a serotonin, an SSRI, will make an impact on making this better. If you take an alprazolam, it's going to pre-fill these serotonin receptors. Let's say it fills five of them. But when your brain calls for, I need to go to sleep, or I need to stay calm, or I need to not lose it on my children, then the release of serotonin of five with a pre-filled five, we got to 10 immediately. And so that becomes seamless. The problem with alprazolam is it only does it for 4 hours. And then we pop and we're back to not sleeping and anxious. And that's where the rebound comes back in. Where addiction comes in is when you have a connection. Serotonin's not a problem. I'm not having sleep problems. I'm not having anxiety issues. I'm not moody. That's connected. I really don't want to give you Xanax because it's closed.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it bounces off this receptor and goes over and potentially hits the dopamine receptor, which is the pleasure center. If you ring the pleasure center, unfortunately, that can create a, I want more and more and more and more. It's a euphoria. It's a high. It's a, oh my gosh, where in getting Xanax to somebody who's having anxiety or panic, like I was, there is no high. It's, I'm just not going to feel like I'm going to die. That beats everything.
I was going to say, and that's pretty good. I would take that,
yeah.
Feeling I'm not going to die.
Yeah. And so just like the college student that wants the Adderall, again, if you truly have an issue, I can give a norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor, which will block the reuptake. So it fires in two and makes a connection. I'm still going to make them better, but what I'm not going to do is if it's truly closed, bounce off with adrenaline and have it go over and hit the pleasure center. And now all of a sudden, now we have an addiction.
Right.
And once the bell has been rung, you can't unring it. And that's unfortunately something that we do deal with in today's life. And unfortunately, it can be very hard and difficult, but that's the exception. But that's also why in talking with patients, we have this conversation and we have both sides of the discussion to ensure that they are dealing with what I call Americanitis and not something else.
What's your success rate?
So remission is well over 85%. And the biggest reason why it's not closer to 100% is because of people are lost to follow up, and or they got feeling better very commonly. And then, oh, I'm back to me. The wires are connected. Oh, I don't know what that was. That was just a bad time in my life. I'm better. I don't need this. It pops. And then sure enough, they come back.
But so, can we acknowledge like 85 is damn good odds? I would say that.
I'd take you to Vegas.
Yeah, 85.
I would go.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The remission rates are, I will say, you can search the published rates, but they're not at 85%. They're lower for sure.
Let's talk real quick about something that when I was younger, I wouldn't say when I was a kid, but the natural thing, you walk in, what did mom and he's not paying attention to school.
Oh, yeah.
All right. What did we do?
Absolutely.
Write a prescription right then and there, right?
Potentially.
And I mean back like 30 years ago or 25 years ago, it was just assuming that little
Ritalin.
Johnny. Okay. So yeah.
Right? ADHD stuff?
Well,
the overdiagnosis?
There was a period of time which I would say, I usually talk about ADHD, the hyperactivity. That gets pointed out. Hyperactive Billy is disrupting the class, and everybody's going to know about it. Now, unfortunately, housewives, Susie, who might sit in the back of the class and think about 15 other different things and or daydream and not pay attention to the math that was talked about, steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, now all of a sudden she doesn't have the understanding of the 5 steps, and she now finds math to be incredibly hard or difficult. It's not that she's not smart. It's just the fact that she didn't get the information. I describe this and tell this to a lot of my pediatrics, is if you have your favorite show and I let you watch it and I ask you questions, you think you'd answer them? He'd go, well, yeah, I like the show. Okay. It's a half hour show. So now I'm going to go ahead and give you a new TV show, same show, but it's just a new episode you haven't seen, 5 minutes. Now I'm going to turn the channel to mom's HGTV or food channel.
Mm-hmm.
And then for 20 minutes, and then I'm going to turn it back for the last 5 minutes. And now I'm going to ask you questions, especially over stuff that was in the 20 minutes you didn't see. And how are you going to do? I'm not going to do very well. And I look at them and go, is that because you're not smart? Is that because you don't care? You're not applying yourself? If only he applied himself. I heard that one a lot. Yeah. You got to try making it through medical school without reading. I have close to an audiographic memory, but my brain staying on task to read couldn't go fast enough. And
brain is moving faster than your eyes can read the words.
Correct. And I understand the speed reading classes, and I even took one thing. Okay, well, if I can just scan over things and I can pick it up at a faster rate. No, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Not for me, at least. The unfortunate part is for a lot of students, for a lot of kids, is that sometimes they begin to self-associate or self-diagnose with, I'm not math smart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not book smart. I'm not test smart. And my job is to get to them before they make those associations, because trying to tell them differently at some point is very hard. They don't want to believe you. Mm-hmm. They think I'm full of it, which sometimes I am.
But not that time.
Not at this time. And it's just a matter of the fact that we need you to be able to watch the whole show, even though it's math, but watch math like it's your favorite TV show. Wouldn't that be okay? And they go, yeah, Mr. Jones really stinks. He's boring as heck.
Mm-hmm.
If I can make it as good as my TV show, I could maybe make it through.
It's like Bluey in this house.
It
Bluey.
Is. Like Bluey.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to ask one other thing real quick before you kick me off the show. This is about men, the pride of not wanting to admit something or coming in and asking for help. I mean, it's...
I was going to say, do men have a problem going to the doctor?
I don't, personally.
Is that... No, that's not right. Men are very quick to go, oh, gosh, something feels wrong. Or they're on their deathbed before they drag themselves in. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Right.
Sorry, go ahead. What were you saying?
Yes.
Pride and
yes.
Such? So,
yeah.
As so, he rolls his eyes at me.
Yeah, the answer is definitely it is. And that's where I used to do this, what I would say backwards. the thing was, is they would come in and they would begin telling me their story, and I would recognize the pattern pretty quickly. Usually guys will come in and I just do a physical. I want you to, okay, you want me to check the fluids, rotate the tires, make sure everything's okay. Okay, fine. We'll do that. And then I'll get the labs. And then when the labs come back normal, I bring you back and say, okay, now your labs are normal. Now what? Then they're like going, we got a problem because something's not right. I go, yeah, I knew. But back in the day, I would then begin to talk about serotonin and adrenaline, and their response immediately would be, okay, so you can't find the answer, so now you think I'm crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That was fun. And I would go, okay, boy, this isn't what I expected. So I would change things around and go, how about if I do this? We'll do a physical, we'll get your labs, but how about if I maybe explain to you, if I read your cards to you before the labs come back, and I maybe even predict that your labs will come back normal, we're going to talk about this thing called serotonin and adrenaline. And I want to get this out now because I don't want you coming back to me later going, well, you know.
Now he just wants me on prescriptions.
Yeah, you're just trying to push drugs on me. And
That's true. He couldn't give me a blood pressure one or this or this or this.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And he's got his quota to hit thanks to the ex-rep, right?
Sure, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when I smile and nod and go, in my reality, those things don't really exist. Having worked for Merck for a long time when I was an undergrad while being a trainer at KU, I understand that whole pharma and that machine, and it is a monster.
Mm-hmm.
I coexist with it. I understand that what it is and see it for what it is and what it's not. The good news is, I would say, we have had some very nice advances through some of these things happening. I don't want to say better life through chemistry, but God is giving us a better understanding of how the body works. And upon figuring that out, then we can figure out, as I told this grandmother, I was not following her grandson. I know how the body works. I know what screws it up, and I know how to put it back. Oh, and by the way, I've been there, done that, got the badge.
Right, because you have the personal experience.
Been there, done that.
Okay, so been there, done that. Now, what's your life verse?
Oh, yeah, having grown up in the Baptist church and went to church at least 3 to 5 times a week.
When the doors were open, you were there,
we
right?
We were there, absolutely, every time. And so I would say, I do understand that the word does not return void, but I really had a sense of God giving me Philippians 4:13. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything, with prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, make your requests be known to God, that the peace that would surpass all understanding would guard your heart and mind in Christ Jesus. I go, okay, you give me this life verse. My first panic attack is at 5. I'm dealing with this on a regular basis. Oh, by the way, when I explained my panic attack to my mother, she threatened to beat me because that was crazy talk.
Right.
Crazy talk, we don't know how to handle.
So we just quiet it.
We quiet it and we find a way to change it or do something different.
And then you, the next time, you just don't tell mom.
It's note to self, don't tell mom. That's fine. I'll just tell my friends. They'll understand. They tried to trigger me.
To make it happen.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay. So 35 years, this involves through high school and undergrad and medical school and residency. Was chief resident at a local hospital.
I really should have read a bio for all of his accolades and like the things that you have done. And I give you a very casual bio, just like, hey, here's my doctor.
Yeah, which I like. That's fine. And that's what I am.
I mean, my bio for you is, hey, meet the man that's changed my life in the last 2 years and make my life 1,000 times better.
Well, and we try not to screw it up. So that's the goal.
Spouse's job.
Yeah, right.
Andrew takes that job.
Right. But yeah, no, living with this for 35 years, and I really kind of gave it back to God many times going, listen, okay, you say ask and it should be given to you. okay, I'm asking, I'm praying, I'm believing. I have, and I can also say I've had a lot of Christians in my practice who they feel like when I bring things like this up, they see it as a lack of faith, or I need to read the word more.
There is that stigma that Christians can't be depressed.
Correct.
And there's a lot of pastors that go through seasons. I know a couple, Tommy Nelson and Steer Farrar once, yep. Like two different times.
Yes.
But Christians don't want to hear it.
Right. And the reality of it is, I believe God created us in his image, but also in the same way, he also created gravity. And as Jesus was taken to the high place and he said, cast yourself down, won't you want an angel show up so not even your heel would be bruised? And he says, I'm not going to put God to the test. By Jesus, he was the word at which this universe was created, and yet he also created gravity. He knew gravity, him being fully man, would fall because of gravity. When the wires pop, gravity's got you. You go back to culture, stress, and genetics, become Amish, wave your magic wand, or unpick your parent. And I know I got it directly from my father. We go straight back to Scotland. So it's an abundance. That's why all the males in my family prior to my father were all alcoholics, because alcohol was the thing that will put this together for a while. Easy a couple hours, but when the alcohol gets metabolized, then it pulls those neurotransmitters and flushes them down the drain. Wherever we were today, we've now dug ourselves a hole for tomorrow, and then a little deeper, and then a little deeper, deeper. And as I've come to find out, if you want to get out of the hole, you got to stop digging.
So alcohol continues to just deplete.
Deplete.
And makes yes. it.
It will reconnect the area. What it does is it passes through the blood-brain barrier and it grabs the serotonin and adrenaline. And wherever they have a neural opening for serotonin, it will deposit serotonin in there. The brain wants to put these wires back together.
Right.
Same with adrenaline. And it wants to put them together. And so alcohol will basically throw rice at a wedding, but it'll all fall into the right spots. But then as the alcohol gets metabolized and disappears, well, it takes the neurotransmitters with it.
Okay. So I will admit that there are days when I will wake up. This makes perfect sense. Now, this is the first time we ever talked about this. So mm-hmm. If I had a drink or two the night before, I am far more anxious that morning.
Absolutely. You've taken the serotonin that we're trying to fill that bucket so that these wires stay together. And you're right. The next day, we might have popped. You got to realize there's thousands, if not millions, of nerves within these tracks. Maybe for anxiety is your low-hanging fruit, the one that's going to pop first. I know for me it was, but sleep really was bad. I never got headaches, but man, my gut was a mess. I'd been worked up sideways, upside down. And so, yeah, I can honestly say after having had some drinks the next morning, I'm like, oh boy, I am anxious and my gut's not right and I don't feel well.
I mean, like Andrew said, this is the first time we're talking about the connection here, because one, I would say like I have felt better than I have in a very long time. And part of, I mean, I just thought it was because I wasn't drinking. I haven't drank since January. Mm-hmm. But now that's like, oh, my sleep is deeper. Oh, like, right. And just things are feeling right. Better. And my mood is more
yet,
stable.
Yeah.
Two, there's that the housewives. We need a glass of wine.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
And I will honestly say, and there's evidence for everything.
Right.
But what I would say is there's pretty substantial evidence that 1 to 2 alcoholic beverages, generally speaking, can have some benefit. Now, there's some newer literature that they're trying to backtrack on that and saying that no alcohol's safe, which I kind of have to take with a grain of salt. And yet I still come back and say, I'm not one to say teetotaling, because I've seen enough studies that do show, if you look at the Spanish the French, the Italians, the Greek, the Germans, their cultures involve far more alcohol, and it doesn't have to be wine. You know, it's got to be red wine to make things well. No, it could be ouzo. I would sooner, eat something I don't like. But the point being, it's the alcohol itself, and the alcohol itself is what dissolves into the blood-brain barrier, into the brain, disperses neurotransmitters, but then it's when the alcohol gets metabolized, it takes the neurotransmitters with them. But I can honestly say, if I go out and I'm at one or two, my next day is usually not that significantly negatively affected, because I am constantly filling the bucket to
keep serotonin. You're not doing it consistently.
Yeah, correct.
It's like, oh yeah, I can go have a drink on Saturday night with all my friends.
Yep.
Because during the week, my buckets are...
I'm filling the bucket up. Daily.
Daily. So right. I'm not going backwards.
Right.
God is so... That's incredible.
It's his design.
It is.
Thank God I didn't have to do anything with it. I'm just a messenger.
Yeah. You're a very good messenger. You're a very good messenger. Okay. So if people want to find you, where can they find you and get more information?
Sure. Yeah. So family practice, board certified family physician, been in practice for 28 years. I have my own clinic at, it's called Pure Health. We used to be at 135th and Quivira, one block east. We're now located off of 69 at 159, one block east. We're at Pure Health at West 160th Street, Suite 200. We are on the second floor. We're there Monday through Friday. For the first 10 years of this 14-year process at Pure Health, we were open 7 days a week. I've decided that I also...
Need some health yourself?
Yeah, yes. And 20 of my 28 years, I delivered babies, and I also... stood on sidelines for sports medicine. I've decided that probably...
Can we do a show just on your resume?
Nah.
Like, holy crap. Like, sports medicine, delivering babies, chief resident. I have questions.
Did you ever deliver a baby on the sideline?
I did not.
Okay.
Oh, there's the story. All right.
I could have put it together. That would have done it. But no, I decided I liked sleep. So that's when I decided to move some of those things to the back burner. But I would say, especially since COVID... 2020, the evidence is very clear. The numbers have gone exponential and things have not come back down. And unfortunately...
Numbers of what?
Americanitis.
So my recommendation to housewives, if any of us, you were like, wow, it's like he's talking to me. This sounds really familiar. I would highly suggest, I'll put all the links in the show notes for you. You can get on their website. You can call and make an appointment.
Yep.
If you are not local, call the office. Find a way, because there are very few doctors that have this background in, say it again, neuropsychopharmacology.
And let me encourage the housewives that if your husband sounds like any of this stuff,
you can do the other half.
This man is very relatable.
Yeah.
He kept the show very clean, right? Which was very nice, but hey.
Vernacular is usually a little bit more
colorful.
Coarse. Yeah.
So that being said, not that requires you to cuss to be a man or anything, but that being said.
I was going
to
say the expectation there.
But if you want to sit down and have a conversation about real life.
Yeah.
This is a guy you could have a beer with too.
Absolutely.
Yes, we would.
Talk golf, talk beer, talk all those things and talk about reality.
Right.
Yeah.
Not feeling like you have to walk in there. And like you said, let's come in here and get the tires rotated and everything else, and then put on a happy face, then get back in my car pissed off. Right?
Exactly. No, it's absolutely. Again, my job is to recognize patterns. And one last anecdote was I recognized COVID in September of 19, when I started calling it the quadfecta, and I called down to Atlanta, Georgia at CDC in October of 19. I said, there's a new virus out here. I'd like to know what it's called. And they looked at me and they said, we don't know what you're talking about. And I said, I'm not asking, I'm telling you. I family practice doc in Kansas City. But I know that there's a new virus and I've never seen this pattern ever. What is it? And they continued to deny. It is what it is. And I think, honestly, they probably had a gag order until things came out from other countries that finally raised their hand and said, yes, we have an issue. And that's when I went, oh, your COVID-19 is my quadfecta. Okie dokie. So as I tell folks, it's an easy conversation. All you have to do is tell me what you're feeling. It's my job to recognize the pattern and identify what it is. We'll help in any way we can.
Great. I can't thank you enough for this time and for literally changing my life and Andrew's life. I'm going to say that for you.
Thank you.
I was
for the better.
For the better. You've given me so much more energy to annoy him. It's great.
Awesome.
And me the will to put up with it.
Yes, and the patience. So
that works out perfect.
This is going to be great for the next till God takes us all home.
Absolutely.
So, but thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me,
Dr. Burns.
I appreciate it. Thank you for this time.
So, until next time, housewives, you want to say bye?
And house husbands.
And house husbands. Bye.
Bye.
Whether we made you laugh or cry today, we pray you feel appreciated, bolder and braver than yesterday, stronger and more faithful for tomorrow, and living in who you were made to be today.
Join our online community on Facebook, link in the show notes, and be sure to review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening. Until next time, housewives, we give you permission to walk confidently, free, and to be intentional in your slippers or stilettos.